So hello and welcome to the Voice of Florida Architecture, where we share the news, happenings, and celebrations from around our state. I'm Rhonda Hammond, AIA, your AIA Florida 2024 president, and I'm excited to be here. Today, we continue our conversations with our honor award winners for 2024 with Jason Hagopian, AIA Florida. So congratulations, Jason, on being awarded AIA Florida's Silver Medal Hilliard T. Smith Community Service Award.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an honor, very honored and humbled to receive this award. Thank you.
So you're most welcome. So the Silver Medal honors an architect whose leadership in community activities and service has been a direct benefit to the profession or community. The individual's leadership and service must demonstrate beyond any reasonable doubt qualities, outcomes of works of art programs or civic influences that have benefited the profession or the community. But first, tell us about your journey to architecture.
It's a great question. I'm one of those folks that can say, like, for as long as I can remember, I always wanted to be an architect. It's a little bit strange, but I can remember as a child going to visit sort of these townhouse timeshare developments with my grandmother. She was young grandmother, so she would pretend I was her child. And we would go to tour you go and you tour these places, you sit through a little lecture, then you get like a free gift. So she was always there to get the free gift, whether it was like a gift card or a small appliance. And we would just look at all the homes, like these beautiful townhomes. And I just remember, I think it was a little bit both aspirational for both of us, because we were sort of, I don't know, like blue collar families, you know, middle income. And I always knew, like, oh, I want to be, I like this. I like all these big new spaces. And I can just remember us going to these places. And it just was something I always gravitated to. And it was lucky because I pursued any form of architecture and engineering graphics that I could get into in my junior high. I would take classes at the vocational school, hop on a bus and head over to this vocational school that taught engineering graphics back, like in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. In high school, my school system had an internship program where you could work one day a week. And I worked in Harvard Square for a very, very prolific architect there called Sert Jackson and Associates, who did a lot of the urban planning in Havana, Cuba back in the day, worked very closely with Corbusier. So I just had these great opportunities that just kind of led me into architecture even as a child.
Wow. So your application for this award speaks overwhelmingly of your soul for service. Service seems to be the underwritten theme. And there is a quote where you state that throughout my life, volunteerism has been the foundation of who I am as an individual, and has provided meaning and purpose well beyond the work I do as an architect. Where did this desire to serve originate?
I'll give full credit to my parents, who always taught me that, like, not to complain about something, because if you don't like something the way it is, I mean, they were too busy, you know, working and raising my brother and I, to do something about it yourself. So that was part of it. That was part of the motivation. And the other part was they were very giving people, and I was brought up to, you know, to do unto others and to always realize that things could always, that we're very fortunate for what little we have, right? We have our health, and that there's always people that have things worse off. So I grew up in a very tight-knit Armenian church environment and family, and was always about giving back and going to the nursing home and teaching handicapped kids how to swim and getting involved in the community and giving some of your allowance. And it just was part of the ethos of who my parents were, probably even my grandparents. And it's kind of, it definitely stuck with me. So it's always been, no matter how little or how much I have, I've always thought very valuable. I think everybody should give back and advocate for sure.
That's kind of, that sounds like me, because my grandparents, my grandmother, and an uncle. I grew up with an uncle, and my grandmother was very much involved, but they always told me that you leave things better than you found them.
Yeah.
So it kind of falls into that category, I
Absolutely.
think. So as we've seen and we've talked about so far, in every aspect of who you are, you give back to your alma mater, your profession, your community, culture, and family. And you make it look so easy. So how do you serve so many and maintain a successful career all at the same time?
An excellent question, Rhonda.
I know. 'Cause,
So this is a very, this is like the question, right? When I was just on a panel on Friday for the Christopher Kelly Leadership Development Program that we're doing here with AIA Fort Lauderdale and AIA Miami. And I was on the panel because we were talking about advocacy. And I showed a slide, second to last slide, sort of all the organizations and boards that I'm involved in right now. So some of them are advocacy, some are philanthropy, some are volunteer. So it's a pretty big list, and all the young or our scholars are all like, oh my gosh, how do you do all that? So look, I mean, we all have the same amount of hours in the day, right? All of us, every human being on the planet, we all have 24 hours in the day. Yeah, we all have very different responsibilities. I don't have children. I don't have, we all have different, I'm not taking care of an ailing parent. We all have to put our time where our time can be. And part of my problem is it's hard for me to say no, right? So, Rhonda, I come and act when you need me. I try to be there for you guys.
Yes, you
So,
are. Bless you.
but it has been a challenge because I've had to say no, of course. But I think it's all about I like being busy, so that's part of it. I get a lot of gratification out of advocating and out of giving of myself to those that need my help. A lot of times it's easy. It seems easy to me. Though to maybe to others it would be like, oh gosh, how do you do it? How do you find the time? And like I can look at my calendar and I have this call. I have a board meeting tonight. I have another board meeting tomorrow night. I have another board meeting Wednesday night, and I'll be skipping something on Thursday night. So I mean, yes, like is it like that every single week? No. Does it require your time? Yes. But then I think like, well, what else, what else would I kind of be doing? I squeeze in time to take care of myself and work out. So I don't want to do that more, like, okay, enough is enough. But I always joke like, hey, we all have the same amount of time in the day that Beyonce has. And look what she's been doing. Look what she's done with her life. So I just think you can always do, I think you can always do more. And I'm not buying it when someone says that they're too busy or they can't find the time. And when they say, how do you find the time? I say, how do you not, how do you not find the time? Right? I mean, like people need you.
So, as you mentioned, growing up, it was just part of your family's values. Were you surprised, and I'm kind of changing this question up a little bit, to find that you could use architecture as a mode to be able to serve, or was that a conscious?
Well, I think I definitely think, and I mentioned this on my panel that I was on Friday, that architects, we're like uniquely qualified to serve on boards or in organizations. We spend 5 or more years in school learning how to be a 360-degree thinker, how to be a problem solver, how to be a consensus builder. I mean, these are skills that are just, they're so applicable to most organizations, to most advocacy. You get on a board that's typically all volunteer, people from all different walks of life. So by default, we have these skills that are just uniquely suited for doing this kind of work, this kind of serving. So was that a great kind of benefit of being an architect, that it does make you so well suited? I think Absolutely, which is why when I see boards, many boards where there's city, county, state boards where there's no architects on it, and oddly, boards that are all about architecture and design or engineering. So that's just the first thing, is like there should be an architect on all of those boards regardless. You'd be surprised how many boards that relate to the architecture field maybe need seven members and only one or two are even required to be an architect. So that's the first like strange thing. And then those positions aren't even always full. So I tell people, even if it's like a parking enforcement board or the urban housing board with the city, like there should be an architect on those boards. Like, okay, it's parking. Like, well, I don't get it. Well, parking is kind of part of the urban environment. Like, you know the urban environment. So that's one thing I would always say, like, we should be all over the place in city government on these boards and committees, and not just the retired real estate agent. No offense to retired
No,
people
not
or
at
real
all.
estate agents.
I think I'm gonna start looking around the city here and see what they have and who's on it.
No, I moved to Fort Lauderdale. I was on the design review board for 9 years in Miami Beach. Then I moved up here and I was like, well, I got to start getting involved in my city. And there was a position on the board of adjustment. And, I got on that board and I'm very happy that I'm on that board.
So you just do you just call them up and say, I'm Jason, I'm an architect, I've
Yeah,
served on
I
boards,
kind
I
of
want to be.
learned. Yeah, part of the. When I initially moved to Miami Beach and I was complaining about all the beautiful homes I was seeing getting torn down, these historic homes. They were building these really ugly modern things that were really bad. And my husband just was like, stop complaining to me. Do something about it. I was like, what can I do? What can I do? And he said, you should get on the board, design review board. And I was like, how do I do that? He goes, well, someone's got to nominate you at the commission. And so I literally went down to City Hall. I sent out emails to all the commissioner aides. And as I tell young professionals in our field, these leaders have to talk to you. They are elected by you, by the residents. So if they don't respond, this is a naughty, naughty. Like, don't worry, you might have to like email a few times and call their
Again.
assistant, but they will meet you in their office, which is usually in City Hall, which is right next to the mayor's office. And I just got to know each of my commissioners, and all you need is one to mention your name during a commission meeting. And I can still remember it. I was watching it on the, it was televised. I was at work. I probably should have been working, not watching it. And the commissioner, it was Michael Gongora at the time in Miami Beach, said, how about this? And he totally had said my name totally wrong. Like, how about this Jacob Jacobian? And they wrote my name on the board and it was like every other letter was wrong, like in my name. And then they got another person to say, oh, okay, well, and then that led to 4.5 year stints on that board. But the effect is dramatic. That's what I mean. Like one person, one voice can make a huge, huge difference.
There
Yeah,
you
it's
go. You're
great.
the epitome of the citizen architect.
Yeah, well, I think it's something we need to kind of yeah, I mean, we can't force anybody to do these things, right?
No,
But I
but
do think the more we talk about it, and the more people that get involved, then it starts to make the people that aren't involved realize, like, oh, I should get involved, right? Like, wow, they're doing this, you're doing this. I'm the only one that's not on a board. I'm the only one that's not sitting on a review board. And not to mention, there are c lots of cities that don't even have any design review boards at all. Like you might want to get involved in your community, like instead of
Like create
being.
one, yeah.
Well, of course, that's how it starts. All of these preservation things and who preserving all the architecture in South Beach, it starts as one person. Barbara Bare Kappaman, she in the 70s, like she did not want to see developers ripping down all the art deco arch. Like it's one voice. You just have
Person.
to know, like, that could be you,
So, Jason, you shared a lot about the Pride Center at Equality Park. Your work on the City of Miami Beach Design Review Board and your dedication to the Miami Center of Architecture and Design. And each organization has its own purpose and its impact on the profession. Is there one that speaks to you or is the most gratifying or that you're most proud of?
Oh, Rhonda, you got all the hard-hitting questions.
Your application. It was just phenomenal.
I believe me, I'm so passionate about all of these organizations.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to, I hope that there's somebody that this all resonates with, you know? So, you know, I would say recently I've gotten pretty involved. I've been on my alumni association board with Rensselaer now for probably 7 years. And I recently got very involved with my School of Architecture. They have a Dean's Leadership Council, which I got involved with. And then through that, I sort of started getting involved in the Institute's Welcoming and Inclusion, otherwise known as Diversity, Equity, DEI initiatives. And because I'm part of the LGBTQ plus community, that work has been resonating with me a lot. You know, you still forget that there are young people out there, you know, and old people, I suppose, that are dealing with / struggling with their, you know, who they are, you know, their being, their sexuality. And, you know, I remember being a freshman and in college, and I was still in the closet. And you know, you don't know what's going on when you're not being yourself, and you spend a lot of energy and a lot of time being very afraid and very fearful of, you know, who knows what, not being loved, your family, not, am I going to find a job, blah, 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 all of those things. But certainly, so I've been pushing a lot of initiatives with my university, and they've been very supportive. And we have a huge, our 200-year anniversary as an engine, as a school, is coming up, and we'll be going up for reunion and homecoming in September. And
wow,
you know, we get these little badges, and you can put little tags on them that say like School of Architecture, College Sweethearts. And so I made sure we were going to have like a pride ribbon this year, which we've never ever had. And I was just like, well, look, if we're going to do these things, we have to put them out there, like for people to see. So when alumni come back and maybe they're part of the LGBTQ plus community, or maybe they're just an ally, you know, they can see like, oh, like RPI cares about this affinity group. I
the
sponsored
whole person.
An exhibit, a Stonewall exhibit that they put in the library on campus. So these are just kind of small little things, but and now I'm chair of the Pride Center board here in Wilton Manors. And so that's been really good. So through my board work, we've been able to build one of the first of its kind, 48 units of LGBTQ plus affordable housing on our campus. So that's kind of a neat mix of like a personal passion and then architecture and how they kind of came together. So
I love that.
You never know where it's going to happen. That's the really amazing thing, is that, you know, architecture is kind of like the built manifestation of all of our ideas, right? So to have something like that come out of basically a volunteer effort that I did is pretty amazing and really gratifying. And to see other people getting the benefit out of something like that is, it's like, you know, you can't put it into words how fulfilling that can be.
You know, I read somewhere, I don't remember in what aspect you were referring to, but you called it DEIB. And I had to look to see what that meant. And the B was for belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And that just struck me. I had to sit with that for a moment because it was the first time I'd heard it referenced. And it's like, you know, all of this, all that we talk about, the DEI, is all about belonging. Everything is about belonging. And I thought that was such a beautiful.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, imagine before there was, you know, before there was a female president of AIA, like you, a young girl would never have, you know, if you don't see yourself somewhere as belonging, you don't see yourself there. You know, this is why we have an issue with, you know, black architects, black, you know, African, female black architects. Like, I mean, these things, thank goodness we are seeing such, I feel like it's dramatic change now. Like most schools of architecture now have more females enrolled than males, right? Like, so at my college, and I spoke to a couple other friends of mine, their schools are at least 50-50, and especially for my school, Rensselaer, which traditionally was started as a male institute college, you know, which is now it's mixed. But when I was there, the whole college, for every four guys, there was one girl. Now that's changed a lot over the last 30 years, but to know that the School of Architecture now, we're seeing more females, but that belonging part of it is that's the hardest part, right, Rhonda? Because you and I, we only really know the world through our own eyes. And we don't know what it's like. Like, well, what is it like? Why can't the Pride Center, for like, why can't we get, or any of these, why can't we get more young, you know, African American people involved? Well, if you go to one of our events, you know, and you, if you like, it's all me, you know, like it's like,
it's
you
true.
Know, that's a problem, right? So that challenge is always going to be there, right? And I think we work hard. AIA specifically has been been working hard to really create a lot of that belonging. And I feel a huge amount of diversity within the organization, and certainly the welcoming and inclusion I've always felt by the AIA. And that's, you know, that's where I want to be, in places like that. And I want to create places like that.
That's
and that's
wonderful.
what architecture can do too.
I know.
Key.
That's
You
what's
have
so
to
beautiful
believe
about
that
it.
architecture can do those things. You know, this is like, this is our challenge, right? To always create spaces that are made for everybody, regardless of any of it, race,
any
disability.
A place to belong. So talk to me about AIA. What made you get involved with AIA to begin with?
Well, this is a really simple answer, to be honest with you. I graduated college in upstate New York, and then moved out to San Francisco to pursue my dreams as, you know, as an architect. Go head out west. That's where all the great stuff is happening, right? So I moved out there with a couple of friends of mine from college to San Francisco. My parents thought I was like losing my mind, but I was like, well, I just bought a plane ticket. This is back before, you know, cell phones and things. So, and then I joined, started working for a firm, and they did offer, I believe, like they offered to pay for membership before I was licensed, of course. But the big thing in San Francisco was AIA San Francisco had a lecture program where they would get, like really famous architects to speak, like Robert Stern, like back in the day, right? Robert Stern or Frank Gehry. So every year, like in, I don't know what it was, September, they would release the lecture program. It was like six months of speakers, so six speakers. And the only way you could get these tickets is you had to be AIA got the first release. So I wanted to be an AIA member so I could get, and it was a huge motivation. It was actually, I've tried to get this kind of thing going with my old AIA Miami chapter, because I know architects love like these starchitects. And this is why at my college, we have Bart Engels come to speak, and you just sort of, and they're, it's mobbed, and they have all their fans, and it's like, you know, it's a whole thing. So that initially was what got me involved. And I really wasn't very involved with AIA when I was in San Francisco for those 10 years, beyond going to the lectures and maybe going to a few events. There was so many other things to do anyway.
Yes.
but it was when I moved here, and then I had met Cheryl Jacobs through, I think, the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce, and got to really know some people. And it was through Cheryl. She did her thing. She
campaigned. And, you know, she's
campaigned.
Coming back to serve with the board or the center. So that's excellent.
She's
news.
Working. I'm still on the Miami Center for Architecture and Design board, and she's working with us. And yes, all, thank goodness, that's, she's doing amazing. So yeah, you know, she sort of dragged me in a little bit, and it, you know, it starts with any kind of volunteering, and you kind of get hooked, right? You start helping out and you start seeing the value of what you can do and you want to do more. And it's been a pleasure to serve AIA in all the capacities that I have, and you know, always could be more, but I feel like I've really put in some good effort and created some good change and done some good stuff.
Now, you have, when I first got on the board and you would give your report on the small firm exchange, in my mind, it's like, when I get through with the vice president of advocacy, I want to learn what's about the small firm exchange. And so I just listened to you. And then when it came to the membership task force, and it's like, somebody somewhere has done good on this. Who do I need to talk to? And everybody said, it's Jason. You got to talk to Jason. So you have.
Well,
you
I'll definitely, you know, I will also want to give a nice shout out to the staff at AIA Florida for, I would, you know, obviously board members, you know, we do what we do, but I commend staff for being supportive of all the, you know, all the, some of the ideas that the board comes up with, that the staff kind of has to sort of make happen. You know, I feel like every time I see them in the background on a call, like we were just on one where I forgot which one it was, but I was thinking, oh my God, there's more things for them to do now. Like they probably get
to
off
implement,
the call.
Implement, yes.
Like, yeah. So, but I will say there's been a lot of empowerment there, and knowing that you have the support of Becky and the whole team, it's I always tell people, like, look, you know, they're not there, well, you're there in part, you work with the board obviously, but I having kind of the access is just a really great, it's really great to have, right? Like I feel very supported, and I always want to make sure when I have a request, that I'm tempering it and trying to understand, because I don't know all of the other things that are happening there. And I, you know, I'm always telling people, like, look, there's no excuse. Like staff is there. Like I'm sure if you ask them something or you send them an email, they'll respond to you. You know,
very much so. When
I mean, they respond to me, but you know, and I know there's a lot of, like, you know, I know there's, again, it's all about kind of understanding the system and working within the parameters, and not, you know, it's not like a 1-800 complain to me number. It's like a 1-800, like, let's work together call, you know? So
when I joined AIA Tallahassee, I was told, if you don't know Becky and Wendy, you need to get to know Becky and Wendy.
Yeah.
And now Chrissy's on that list. Chrissy, our latest, our newest staff member. Yes. So what advice would you share with the young architect just beginning their career? What would you tell them? I changed this. I used to ask, what would you tell your younger self? But now I want to know, what would you tell somebody just starting their career?
Those are both really good questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, understand that some things take time. I think young architects starting their careers, I find, and because, you know, I have a few of them working in my office, they're super eager, which is amazing, right? They want to get licensed like right away. And I know that, you know, it's easier now to get licensed quicker. Because you can be racking up hours while you're doing your internship and all of these things. You could take some of your exam right after you graduate and all this stuff. Like back in our day, you had to wait the 3 years or whatever it was. So,
and it was only once a year.
Yes.
And yeah.
So yeah. You can, there's definitely a mechanism to make that, what I think NCARBS is, the average time from starting your freshman year in college to getting your license, I think it's like 11 years or something, right? So it's still not quick by any stretch of the imagination, but to think that like you're gonna be licensed, you know, in 6 years, it's just like, just relax, it's hard. It's really hard. They want it to be hard. So I'd say just be patient. And I would say don't let fear and common sense get in the way of anything that you want to do. I think, and I would say this is where I'll weave in like what I would tell my younger self, right? It's like, don't spend so much time kind of worrying about, oh, like, what are they going to think? What's going to happen? I think maybe more so than ever, there's more pressure on young people nowadays, and to whatever, to, I don't know, to fit in, to get more likes, to be whatever. I have no idea. But in my age and my wisdom, I would say that, you know, I can see time and energy that I spent in places that just could have gone somewhere else, Rhonda, that just, you know, it's life is just too short. And when you're young, you don't know that, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Because you're like, look, I got more of my life ahead of me than behind me. Well, wait till you get to be my age. And then you'll be like, oh, now it's a little bit of a balance, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, less time worrying and just doing
yeah,
what you think is right. Yeah.
And then, you know, don't be afraid to change the world, because we're hoping that they all do.
You know, that was the best part of teaching. And I love that third year, because it was that transition. And again, it was like, you have no idea what you've gotten yourself in for, and you can change the world. And that's where I got my live, work, play. It's like, because you're going to impact people's lives, their entire life spectrum. So just think about that, and then just go do it and be mindful of what this space is for, and the people that it's going to serve. And, you know, you're on the brink of the rest of your life. So just enjoy it. Enjoy it. Yeah.
You only have this day once.
So congratulations again, Jason.
Thank you, Rhonda. Thank you so much. And thank you to the AIA, and
thank you for all you do,
Rhonda. You've been a great leader, and you should be very happy with all the things you've accomplished.
Thank you so much. I love this group, and I'm like you. I like to serve. I like to see people succeed. And I just think there's so much potential with this group. And when you've got the staff behind you, and then all the people around the state like yourself, I really think there's nothing we can't do if we decide this is what we need to do. So that's what we're moving forward. And the podcast is one of those things I wanted to share with the membership about the people, the architects around the state. And I thought the award winners would be an ideal way to do that, is let people see. And I hope that people are inspired by your story, and that other people would be inspired to apply, so that we can see who else is out there. And then the young people coming out, that they can see that wherever they are, that architecture can be a part of their tool for service too. So it's just, you've got me all inspired now. I'm going to go figure out something this afternoon.
Well, thank you for
your service to the AIA Florida and the profession at large. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right. I hope our listeners enjoyed getting to know Jason as much as I have. And I welcome you back for the next episode, where I'll begin conversations with our vice presidents from our state board. And the first will be our vice president of communications, Monty Stark, AIA. So thank you for listening. Thanks, Jason.
Jason Hagopian, AIA, is a dedicated community leader and architect committed to positive change and inclusivity. As vice chair of the Pride Center at Equality Park's board of directors, Jason spearheaded a comprehensive master planning project that shaped the programming for the Pride Center's extensive property, including Florida's first LGBTQ+ affordable senior housing project, of which he also served as a design and construction advisor. Jason has served for over 8 years on the City of Miami Beach Design Review Board. During his time on the DRB, he has advocated for superior design, sustainability, and employment equity. During his service with MCAD, Jason encouraged continued educational partnerships with nearby schools of architecture and increased programming during the pandemic where he crafted virtual opportunities focused on bringing the community together. Jason is an active member of the Rensselaer Alumni Association Board, currently serving as Vice President and Co-Chair for the Communications Committee, where he is focused on growing the alumni community by connecting with other chapters and fostering connections between alumni, facilitating interactions with each other and with current students. Jason is an active leader within all levels of the AIA, serving as AIA Fort Lauderdale President-elect, AIA Florida Committee member for the Outreach Task Force and Convention, and as Small Firms State Representative to AIA National. His leadership and devotion as a tireless volunteer and champion are evident in his ability to transform spaces and empower communities through his expertise. The jury thought Jason's breadth and depth of community service and outreach was extensive, commendable, and refreshing, sharing how much they enjoyed seeing their peers out doing good things in the community.